The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Anthony, how are you?
Dealing with the things that supermen have to deal with in Israel, I guess. Yeah. A lot of issues that are on the table at the moment. And, of course, unfortunately, Corona is still top of the news items. Everywhere is still, all the news is still very much being dominated by issues of Corona, the second wave. I feel somehow that Israel is at the forefront of this because we don't seem to be getting a lot of information from other countries about this uptick about second wave that I have seen in certain other countries, Germany, I think, and Czech Republic and a few other European countries, that there has been a certain increase as a result of reopening. But I'm not sure that we've got a lot of information to go on here. And so I feel that we're very much blazing the trail in a sense because there is this obvious dilemma going on between whether we pull back and close down again or whether we allow the economy to continue to open up or to remain open and have to just deal with the virus to the best possible way, in the best possible way that we can. It seems like we're once again just making it up as we go along because there's just nothing to go on.
Yeah, it really is the case, but that is the reality, and that's how so far Israel's been, I think, fairly successful around it. Yesterday, you told us, of course, this Corona cabinet was meeting. Did they come up with specific restrictions?
So they have come up with very specific restrictions, and the whole response to the situation has been quite interesting. First of all, public gatherings have now been slimmed back again. So whereas before, people could meet, for example, in shuls to pray, churches, mosques, to have prayer services. I think with up to 100 people, that's been now slimmed back to 50. No more than 50 people gathering together to pray. That includes also funerals, and it includes also for a Brit Milah, for those people who are celebrating a Brit. Unfortunately, the number of people are limited to 50, and also, unfortunately, funerals. They're also being limited to 50 people. And in addition to that, gatherings, social gatherings, so in event halls celebrations, that's being limited to 250 people where it is an outdoor venue and 100 people if it's an indoor venue. So those are the new restrictions that have been placed on social gatherings and public gatherings. And in addition to that, the universities have been advised that the semester end exams that are now due to take place or are already taking place during the course of this week and over the next few weeks, those semester end exams are to be done at home, online. No coming together on university campuses for exams. Let's just remember that our students have been at home all semester. The semester is the equivalent of a half an academic year. And since the beginning of March when the new semester began, students have been studying at home, so there have been no frontal lectures taking place at all in Israeli universities. And now even the exams are going to have to be conducted at home according to the latest instructions from the Ministry of Health and the Corona Cabinet. What's interesting for me is that the Minister of Finance came on to say that he's still very much of the view that we need to be pushing ahead and not closing down. And the reason that he is of this view is because even though there has been a significant uptick in the number of cases of Corona, COVID-19 that have been diagnosed, yesterday, for example, in the last 24 hours, over 400 cases diagnosed across Israel, he says that the same is not true. We're not seeing a proportionate increase in the number of people who are seriously ill, hospitalized, and being intubated, people who are having to be put onto respirators. And so he thinks that while the number of cases is increasing, the number of seriously ill people is not increasing all that much. And until such time as the number of seriously ill people does increase, he feels that we should continue to keep the economy open. Now, it sounds all quite sensible and it's quite convincing, except the fact that my impression is that the seriously ill people kind of comes afterwards. It's all a little bit of a cycle. We don't see people dying until a few weeks after we've seen an increase in the number of people diagnosed. Perhaps this is a question for Dr. Myberg more than for me. But as far as I can make out, there are very few people who kind of get diagnosed for the first time and have to immediately go onto respirators or immediately have to be hospitalized. Generally speaking, there's a bit of a process. Yeah. First of all, you get diagnosed, you're not feeling all that well, you've got showing symptoms, whatever it is, you go into isolation, and then gradually the situation for those people who it affects in this way, gradually the situation deteriorates, then you have to be hospitalized and respirated and all of that process. So I just wonder whether it's not a recipe for disaster taking this attitude, because inevitably it will come as part of the process. I'm not sure. I mean, it could well be that we've become a little bit smarter about how we're treating the virus, and therefore we're managing to avoid having people too seriously ill because the treatments have developed. I mean, that could also be one of the factors that we need to take into consideration.
Yeah. Well, let's hope it is the case that, in fact, the treatment has become more sophisticated. The Palestinian Authority yesterday sent a message that they would like to enter into direct peace negotiations with Israel.
First of all, the interesting thing is that they've sent this message through not through U.S. sources, but rather through the European friends, through the quartet, call it what you want, the countries that don't include the U.S., because obviously the Palestinian Authority and the U.S. don't necessarily have a very close working relationship. And so the U.S. would be the last source that the Palestinians would wish to use to send this information. But the question is, what is going on here? What have the Palestinians suddenly sensed? I mean, you know, the so-called deal of the century that was presented by the Trump administration already some time ago has not really gone anywhere since the moment that it was first presented. And so I can't imagine that the Palestinian Authority is responding to that particular issue, although many of the reports are talking about this being their response to the Trump peace proposal. I don't think that that's the case. I just wonder whether this is not as a result of this pressure that they're feeling from the possibility of the annexation. The original date that was actually mentioned for the annexation to take place was the 1st of July, tomorrow. That was when the annexation was due to have taken place. It seems highly unlikely in my estimation that it'll take place tomorrow, even though there has been a lot of talk about annexation. Benny Gantz has particularly tried to backpedal on the idea of annexation. The Prime Minister has responded by saying, I can undertake the annexation without having Gantz's support, so I don't really care what he thinks or says about it. We can go ahead anyway. But here it is, the Palestinians who theoretically have broken off all cooperation with Israel with regard to security, have, you know, criticized everything, almost everything that has happened since the moment that the Trump peace plan was announced. I think they're feeling a little bit of heat now that Israel may well go ahead with this annexation and they will be left on the sidelines having said no, no, no to everything rather than let's see what we can do to somehow try to find, you know, a compromise solution which everybody can live with. Interestingly, the Israeli government has also said that the Jordan Valley would not be part of the annexation plan if and when this annexation actually does take place. So originally the Jordan Valley was on the table. Now apparently it's not on the table. Rather, it's going to be other parts of Judea and Samaria, the details of which are not exactly clear. But what's interesting for me, perhaps most interesting about this proposal by the Palestinian Authority, is that it has come with a further little piece of information. They would like to enter into direct talks with Israel and discuss land swaps. Okay. Now, the whole land swaps thing is really, really critical because we've discussed before that the Palestinian Authority was due to get a certain piece of land, which would be the new Palestinian state, but that they would not get certain parts of Judea and Samaria that currently sort of fall within the geographic region of what the Palestinian Authority area is. So, for example, Ariel, and for example, the Gush Etzion block, and for example, Maale Adumim and other places in Judea and Samaria, which have got significant Jewish populations. Those were due to be negotiated away from the Palestinian Authority to be within Israel, in return for which the Palestinian Authority would receive other land as a compromise, as a, you know, some sort of compensation. So now the Palestinians are again talking about land swaps. So this is an interesting development. I'm not quite sure if it's going to take us anywhere anytime soon, but it's certainly a significant change of direction from the Palestinians.
Fascinating indeed. Anthony, a lot of South Africans obviously or generally look to make Aliyah, look for property in Israel. Apparently there's a new property on the market. The U.S. Embassy in Israel is selling the ambassador's residence in Herzliya. Tell us about this property if any of our listeners are interested. Is it going at a reasonable price?
Good luck. Knockdown price. Yes. A knockdown price. Howard, you wouldn't believe it. 300 million shekels only. And that's the equivalent of about $80 million, more or less, give or take a few. It would make it the most expensive property in Israel. And what's more, I understand that the entire place needs renovating. So you would get effectively a piece of land that you would have to, from what I've been told, you would have to literally knock the building down and you would have to rebuild it from scratch. But it's not just any old piece of land. This is a piece of land that is on a cliff overlooking the Herzliya beach. It is the most unbelievable location, really the most unbelievable location. It has magnificent views. It has 5,000 square meters of land. That's the property size. And currently the house that sits on it is 1,000 square meters big. I mean, it's really one of the most expensive streets in Israel. Incredible. And it's got the most unbelievable views, really a great location. Interestingly, I mean, it has been the U.S. ambassadorial residence since 1962. And the current ambassador, David Friedman, has decided that it's time to move to Jerusalem. This is part of the overall move of the U.S. embassy to Jerusalem, vacating the property in Herzliya. It's been an iconic landmark property for many, many years. Everybody knows the U.S. Ambassadorial residence in Herzliya. Really, really stunning location. And if it is sold for 300 million shekels, we'll have to see. It'll obviously beat Roman Abramovich's buy for 226 million shekels on a property that's not that far away from where that is. So a surprising move. And the surprising news is that really the state of the residence itself is really not that great, and it will have to be rebuilt completely. But if anybody wants it, and anybody can afford it, it's definitely something worth having. Absolutely.
Yeah, it's a must have. Finally, Lebanon has become edgy over Israel's gas exploration activities. What is Lebanon nervous about?
Well, Lebanon has been trying to explore natural gas within its own territorial waters. As we know, Israel has already been very successful in exploiting the gas. The gas is flowing already out of Israel's gas fields and has been for some time. Lebanon has also discovered some gas within its territorial waters, but now, during the last few days, the Israeli government has already published a tender to exploit a new block, which is right on the border of the territorial waters with Lebanon. So Block 72 is located. Block 72 is the new block that the Israeli government would wish to exploit. And that is located exactly next to Block 9, which is on the Lebanese side of the territorial waters. And the Lebanese are just feeling a little bit nervous about this. I'm not quite sure if they feel that Israel may somehow be able to steal some of its gas on the other side of the boundary of the territorial waters, or whether this might just be sort of an act of a declaration of hostility towards Lebanon. Having said that, the Lebanese are clearly very, very nervous, and they have declared that this is an extremely dangerous situation, which will complicate things further, according to Lebanese President Michel Aoun. So let's hope that it doesn't escalate tensions along the border with Lebanon.
Indeed, let's hope. Anthony Reich, thank you as always. I think you can go back to your other activities right now, and we'll of course catch you tomorrow morning, same time, same place.